This show is a proud member of the Nerdy Legion Podcast Network. Get more at nerdylegion.com. Enjoy the show.
Here's the good thing about having a large mason jar in a tonic. You can sit at your computer for an hour and a half, talk it to your friend, and not run out of gin and tonics.
I thought you were going to say, you never really know if it's one drink or two drinks or three drinks, because it's so big.
Well, I mean, there's a measurement.
No, you don't want to see that.
This is 900, which I'm assuming is milliliters. Yes, it is.
900?
900 milliliters.
My mason jar is 1,500.
Oh, really?
Yeah, I got it at Target, dude. That's why I'm drinking out of it.
Well, Go ahead.
Sorry. I gulp my, unless I put a straw in it, in my liquids.
Yeah.
I gulp like I'm a snake swallowing, you know, a rat. Like, I take such huge gulps that if I had a regular, like the glass that you would get at a restaurant size, I could gulp that. It'd be three gulps. I'd be done. Mm. Like looking for the next glass. So this mason jar is gigantic. So it's an easy thing for me to, because it's pretty much like three or four regular glasses put into it.
Yeah, that's pretty much what I do. Like when we record any podcast, really. Because obviously I drink a lot of gin and tonics, but like I'm not going to make a gin and tonic on just a regular glass. You know what I'm saying?
No. Like, no.
If I'm just like around the house sipping on it, then that's fine.
Mm-hmm.
But I don't want to get up while I'm in the middle of a conversation to make another one. You know what I'm saying?
So
it depends on the podcast. So a lot of them I'll use the regular small mason jars. I think they're 400 milliliters. But I figured tonight I'm recording with Nick. Usually when Nick and I record, it's a much longer podcast. I'm going to bring out the big boy.
Nice.
And I'm glad I did, because I still have 250 milliliters of gin and tonic in here.
Hot dog.
I don't know what that is in the American standard.
You don't need to know. But listen, best you don't know.
Look, we've got listeners all over the world. You know what I'm saying? Like, they don't right. care.
No, they don't.
They know what's up. It's just the Americans that are what's he talking
about? Mm-hmm.
Mm.
Are you working tomorrow?
Nick?
Bright and early?
Does a bear shit in the woods?
I'm just asking.
Yeah, matter of fact, I have a long.
Oh, that stinks. Will the gin and tonic help you sleep more soundly?
Oh, for sure.
Yeah, same year.
For sure. But here's the thing, like, it doesn't really matter. I've got this thing. So when I work, I have to have unwind time.
Mm.
And if I work a longer than usual shift,
mm-hmm.
I need a little extra unwind.
Smart.
But it's the same thing when I do the podcast, especially if we record late.
Mm-hmm.
And especially this podcast, because it gets me very excited. And so,
same here.
So I need some unwind time afterwards.
Mm.
Unless we record and it's like, you know, like 1 a.m. or 2 a.m. when we're done. Or I've drank several thousand milliliters of gin and tonics.
Yes.
Then I need some unwind time. But I think it'll be good tonight. I may watch something later on.
Ooh, nice.
We'll see.
Well, after open bar last night, I slept the sleep of angels.
Oh, dude, I slept until like 11 something.
Oh, cats.
Because I don't know what time we got done last night, because I fell asleep.
I know. I could tell.
But I was still recording, so it's fine, because I sent Ronnie the recording tonight.
That's too good. No, I tried to, like, I was a dum-dum. I went upstairs and tried to get onto my iPad and, like, let me just get some reading. That'll slow me down and make me relax a little. No, I was so three sheets to the wind.
Dude.
As soon as I laid down, like, I woke up at 7. Hmm. And I might, and like my iPad was just laying on my chest. Well, it's like, oh my God.
So I woke up really confused. Because I was in, so my computer's in the family room. So obviously we're recording and I was in the family room. And I remember at some point during our chat last night, I got up. And I went and I sat down on the couch. But I don't remember putting anything on TV, so obviously I didn't watch anything.
What the hell? Were you still looking at tech stuff? Because I know you got swooped away for, God, at least 40 minutes. Like,
oh, dude, I was so busy, like, looking at equipment.
I know. One time, like, you didn't say anything for ages, and I thought you passed out, and you're like, no, dude, I'm still here. I'm just muted looking at equipment. And I was like, oh, okay.
Yeah, I was looking at equipment. So, because I got a new microphone. So you can tell.
Yes.
Unfortunately, I don't know what you're hearing because...
Oh, no. You sound good except when you went digitized a little bit.
Oh, well, we're going to get to that in a second. That's Google's fault, actually.
Dumb Google.
It's Google's fault. We'll get to that. But so I got a new microphone, and we tried this before, you know, like a couple hours ago when we started recording.
Mm-hmm.
I'm breaking down the fourth wall.
Are we already on our next podcast?
Oh, are we recording? We've been recording.
Oh my God! Okay,
listen. Don't you know how this works? Listen. All right, I'm going to tell you a secret now.
Oh, no.
You should know this now after 25 years of podcasting that 99% sure if we're talking and I don't say that we're not recording, chances are we're recording.
Okay. Gotcha. All right.
So I got a new microphone and I love it. I spent like Zoe and I sat down on my desk today.
Mm-hmm.
And we were like testing the sound of this new microphone. Because I got a real microphone. And by real, I mean they're all real.
You're like a radio DJ now.
But like a radio DJ microphone.
So you've gone from a computer gamer look to a DJ.
Yes. Well, here's the thing. You know what's funny? The number one reason why I wanted to purchase this microphone is not even for sound quality. The number one reason I wanted to buy it is because I wanted it to be able to put my microphone on a boom stand. So the microphone that I've been using for the past year and a half, I want to say. Because my wife bought me that last microphone. Mm-hmm. I got it for Christmas. I mean for Santa. Sorry, kids. Santa brought me that microphone. Not this last Christmas, the Christmas before. And that's what I've been using. And it was fine. Like, it worked great. It was kind of a condenser mic. But it picked up a lot of background noise. And it was USB. And I just... I wanted to be a little more hipster about my audio.
Nice.
And the thing is, it came with a stand, but it was a little tripod. And with that kind of microphone, you have to be somewhat close to the microphone to pick up good audio. And so because it was a really short stand, I would most often pick up the microphone, close the little tripod, and just hold it in my hand and talk into it.
You know what they said in podcasting school? It's 101. I know you still haven't graduated with your bachelor of science of podcasting. But you know the old phrase. Ladies love a boom stand.
Ladies don't love, yeah. Well, so
wow, that's a gin and tonic right there.
Maybe. So most of the time I would hold the microphone in my hand. Here's the thing, Nick. as everyone should by now know, my family is Italian and Spanish. And here's the thing. Let me tell you something about Italian people and Spanish people. We have to speak with our hands.
Mm-hmm.
Okay? If we're not using our hands when we talk, then we're not properly communicating. And so if I'm holding a microphone with one hand, the other hand feels very lonely.
And or you're waving around both hands, and then the audio sounds horrible.
Well, sure. But then my brain's like, what the hell's happening?
Yeah.
So for months, I've been thinking about, like, I need to get a boom stand so I can get this microphone on a stand and, like, not have to hold it.
Mm-hmm.
Just talk into it. But I was like, if I'm going to do that, I want to get a better microphone.
Sure. Makes sense.
Listen, we've been doing this for 25 years.
Right.
We need to be professional.
And technology has advanced in those 25 years.
That's very true. And also gotten very much cheaper.
Mm-hmm.
So I found a microphone that when we started this podcast would have cost like $300.
Mm.
And I found it for technically, literally, like I literally bought a bag of peanuts with my Bitcoin and sent it to these people, and they sent me a microphone.
Wow, the magic.
Magic. And it's a really high quality microphone.
Cool.
What's the
range of the boom stand?
Probably like 4 foot.
So you could stand up and move the microphone and do stretches if you wanted to.
Yeah, I could easily stand up and do stretches.
Nice.
But I mean, that's not really why I got it. I'm not going to stand up.
Well, you never know.
Yeah, I mean, I guess you're right.
What if I say, hey, go grab that book on your shelf that's right there?
Well, but the good thing is the area where I usually record is in our family room, and it's right next to our sectional.
Mm.
And so now, because I'm on this this boom stand, technically I could just go sit on the couch.
Oh no, that's going to be some lazy ass podcast.
And
these are the lazy years.
And scooch the boom arm over, and do that. But but then I couldn't hear you because my headphones, the cord is only like 3 foot long.
What? You need an extension on that, son.
Well, I'm considering getting some. I have a mixer coming in.
Yeah.
And the way I want to set it up is everything, the inputs and outputs, all go to the mixer.
Mm-hmm.
And so if that's the case, then I can plug in just my headphones into the mixer. And therefore, I will be much closer to the couch. And therefore, I could just sit on the couch with my headphones.
You know you're an inch away from laying down on the couch. And then, oh my God, the amount of like pulling out, like, let's talk, come on, let's have a good time. Like, you're going to be so close to Snoozeville. Oh boy.
Yeah, that's
going to be dangerous.
I'm not doing that. I'm just saying I could.
I'm going to have to up my podcast game. I got to take the reins.
You got to take the reins.
Yeah. You got to put the kid in.
I'm just saying, look, listen, I got to tell you, Nick.
What?
You on this podcast sound wonderful.
Oh, I can't wait to hear it then.
Dude, you sound wonderful every episode of this podcast.
I don't sound like my normal Charles Nelson Reilly.
No, of course not. Here's the thing. I sound like kind of garbage on this podcast.
No way.
All right, just like a little garbage.
Hey, let me ask you a question about your technical setup now.
Mm-hmm.
Does that mean that I won't be hearing your background noise?
I'm glad you asked. Because without getting into technicalities,
people love the technical stuff, dude. Get into it.
Well, yes, but here's the thing.
So I am in the Michael Myers school of podcasting, in which I just want to record and just fucking put it up somewhere so people can listen.
Yeah. No editing.
No editing. But unfortunately, like, when I play it back and I listen to some things, it's not quite what I would want it to be. You know what I'm saying?
You like to tighten it up a little.
I want to tighten it up a little bit. So the microphone that I was using before, it was picking up background noise. And so there was some, like, hissing. And so I would have to go, and when I'm adding, like, the intro and the music and all that stuff, I would have to go in and put in filters to get rid of the hissing. And it's just annoying. Mm. But with having now better equipment, I can do all that as I'm recording. And so whenever I have to edit the episode to get it ready to post, there's nothing for me to do. Now I can just literally put the intro music and be done with it.
Wow.
You see what I'm saying?
Yeah, that's great.
So yes. And plus, like, we're not going to talk about this right now, so don't start on it. But I'm about to launch a new podcast / YouTube channel.
Mm-hmm.
And so I want to make sure that, like, it's good quality. You know what I'm saying?
Sure. Did you answer my question?
Wait, what was your question?
About your background noise.
Oh, it's gone.
Because I'm curious, will I still be able to hear Reagan or Heather in the background?
If they speak,
or do they have to speak pretty loud for your microphone to catch that?
Yeah, if they're loud enough, you'll still be able to hear it.
Okay. I don't want to lose that.
Oh, no, you won't lose that.
Okay.
I'll just be like, listen, this is a quality podcast. We cannot be flagship continuously if we don't just talk into a microphone.
We're doing baby Jesus's work.
This is baby Jesus's work. Sweet 8-pound, 6-ounce baby Jesus. Get up the couch. Come talk into the microphone.
Yes.
Amen.
Get over here. What we're doing right now, we're taking one little fish from our knapsack. And guess what? We're throwing it under a blanket. You know what it's going to do under there? Multiply for the masses. Multiply. We're feeding the masses right now.
You know what Jesus did when he ran out of wine? He brought on some empty fucking jars, and boom, there was wine. And that's what we're doing right now.
You know what we're doing? We're pulling out those jars, and we're throwing them out. We're grabbing some mason jars, and we're making gin and tonics. That's what we're doing.
See, I like the way you think, Nick.
Yeah. You know why? Little baby Jesus.
Baby Jesus.
Yeah.
Exactly why.
Right.
Speaking of baby Jesus, you and your wife watched Philip K. Dick Electric Dreams.
Yes.
All right. I want to know first, how far did you get?
Episode 4.
Okay. So episode 4 is the, what's the weird guy's name?
Steve Buscemi.
That guy. Okay.
Yes.
Episode 4 is my my least favorite episode, FYI.
Okay. Good to know. Good to know. All right. I might be in that camp.
I like it. All right. So tell me about the show. How'd you like it? Or dislike it, maybe?
I have to start off that I'm surprised. Granted, I didn't read anything about it because I don't want things spoiled. But when I read that the executive producer, as well as the first episode, the story, of course, all the stories are inspired by Philip K. Dick. Okay, yes. We get it. But somebody has to adapt those stories.
Right.
And the first story that was adapted, it was adapted by the executive producer of the series. And that is, how do you pronounce his name? Ronald B. Moore?
Ron B. Moore from Battlestar Galactica.
Yes.
Yes.
That impressed me more than anything else. That got me so excited at the end credit.
See, this is what I like about you, Nick. Because unlike a lot of people who watch TV and movies, you actually give a shit about who is making these things.
Oh yeah. I'm all on board.
Yeah. And you get excited when you're like, oh my God, this person is doing this because I can't wait because they did such and such.
Yeah. Bryan Cranston produced 2 episodes already.
Yes.
I know. I mean, it's exciting. It's really smart sci-fi. You were right. By the way,
since you said that, I don't know if you knew this, but today is the 10th anniversary of Breaking Bad.
Oh, yes. Your wife threw that out on Facebook and said that there was a marathon going on tonight.
I wouldn't know because I don't use Facebook, but yes.
I know you don't, but let me tell you what your wife just said. Yeah, which is really exciting. And I loved seeing, I want to say it was GameSpot. I always flip the letters. GameSpot had, I think it was the top 20 Breaking Bad scenes that like influenced television. Like, I love that they're pulling out like the favorite episodes and stuff like that.
Oh, yeah, that's cool.
That's one of those shows that, like, good for them that they won all these awards, and rightfully so.
Yeah, that's cool.
Yeah, but man, getting back to Electric Dreams, it probably has the best opening title sequence that I've seen in years. I want to be in every one of those scenes. Oh my God. The one scene of the two people with this long leash and it's around, like, it looks like a smoke, like a goldfish made out of smoke. Oh my gosh. There's so many cool images in that. It just seems like they spent a lot of money on it.
Yeah.
And my wife's favorite, I think it was her favorite episode was number 3.
Really?
With Bryan Cranston.
Yeah, that was a good one.
And are we spoiling? Because I can talk around.
All right, spoiler alert.
No. I can talk around it because it's pretty recent. Let me talk around it because I don't want people to tune out.
No. Listen.
No. The show's
been out for like 2 weeks.
I'm not going to spoil it.
This won't be out for at least another week.
I don't care. I'm not going to spoil it.
All right, fine.
I could talk around it. The Bryan Cranston episode, which is episode 3. I still think the first episode was my favorite. But the third episode, Bryan Cranston is in charge of an away team, a military team that goes to this other planet to pretty much steal resources from this planet. And
a very specific resource.
Yes. But I, like I said, I'm trying to be pretty vague.
Okay, fair.
And I thought the convention of the sci-fi tropes in it were so Philip K. Dick. Like, we fucked up this planet, so now let's go to another planet so that we can get all of those resources that were depleted from this planet because we were dum-dums. So let's go to this other planet and strip mine it for their resources. So, like, why fix our problem? We'll just go and conquer another planet. Like, I love that type of stuff. Yep. So Bryan Cranston's in charge of this team, and all you see is these, like, remote cameras that are at these weird angles. But for a television show to have that level of cool special effects, and I know it's, like, all CGI, but I thought those, like, there was a firefight, and I thought that scene of, like, the battle done at these weird angles, I thought that looked spectacular. I just, especially on a small screen, I was like, dang, that looks really, like, that's something I haven't seen before. It looked really neat. But then, and I'm, like I said, I'm going to talk around it. At the end of the episode, it was pretty ballsy, the decision of how it wrapped up. I think a lot of sci-fi shows might go to that edge, but then pull it back. And I was really impressed with them, like, no, this is, like, it definitely was Philip K. Dick. Like, it was really, really neat how they did that. And I liked the second episode.
All right, so the second one's my favorite.
Oh, okay. I even looked over at the wife, and I'm like, this could be Amazon in 15 years.
Yeah.
You know, it's just like, oh my God.
No, that's true though. And I think that's why episode 2 was my favorite. Episode 2 is Autofac.
Yeah.
Yep. Because so yeah, you're right. I think so episode 2 is a lot like a Black Mirror episode.
Oh, neat.
Because well, you haven't started Black Mirror yet?
No, because it's too suspense horror-y. Yeah. Right. And I know not all episodes are like that. Like, if you were to tell me, oh, there's sort of Outer Limits, Twilight Zone, I would be in. But when I hear some of the concepts for it, it sounds great. But then I'm like, that's not where I want to go.
All right, look. All right. Watch Black Mirror. If you don't want the horror stuff, skip the last episode.
Okay.
Of season 4.
Good to know. Good to know.
But I think season 4 of Black Mirror is the most accessible.
Like the highs and lows are more in line.
Oh, for that for sure.
Okay, that's cool.
I would say season 4 is the best season.
Oh, great. Okay, maybe I'll give it a shot.
Plus the episodes are the most accessible. Like they're the most fun to watch. I would say they're some of the most well done.
See, for me, like there's always like two different fans of Twilight Zone. I'm the Burgess Meredith glasses fall and break when he finally has all the time in the world to read.
That episode.
That's the crap that I love. Like, but then there's other people that love, you know, the creature on the wing of the plane. Oh my God. Oh my God. You know, like,
that's a
whole different other fan. Like, I like the stuff that's just like, oh my God, that's horrible. And that crushes me. Cause I mean, okay, let's just put it this way. I tricked my wife into watching for the first time Baby Driver.
Oh,
tonight.
Wait, how was it?
Dude, I told you I went to go see that movie in the theater in the fall. It's still in my top 5 of the year.
Shit.
It's so freaking good. And but, even rewatching, it's so freaking good.
But I'm boycotting Kevin Spacey.
And I hear you. He is in that movie. He has a prominent role. That movie, which is fine. Boycott it. Go back to it in 5 years. Who cares? But I just said, I have this movie. You know how much I love the beginning scene, the beginning bank heist scene.
Yeah.
And it plays John Spencer Blues Explosion, Bell Bottoms from the very beginning of the movie till the end of the song. So like you get Bell Bottoms, the complete song for whatever it is, 3 minutes and 38 seconds. And that to me is just like, oh my God, that's some crazy, like that's a crazy decision to do, you know, way to go, Edgar Wright. So I wanted to show her that just to be like, isn't that cool? And the very next scene after that heist, is the main character Baby going and grabbing coffee and bringing it back.
Yeah.
But Edgar Wright shot it almost like a musical where like he's dancing on the street and like weaving in and out of people. And there's just a lot of electricity in it. And after that scene, they're talking about the next heist. And I just paused it and went and grabbed our dinner, brought it back. And I'm like, well, we don't need to watch any more of this. I just wanted to show you those two scenes. And she goes, is it really violent? And I'm like, well, it's about bank heist. So guess what? There's going to be some violence in it, but at the end of the day, it's a love story.
Uh-huh.
And she's like, all right, fire it up. And she watched the entire thing and she was just like, that was a really good movie. I wish it wasn't, but that was a really good movie. But my roundabout point to Baby Driver, going back to our talk about Twilight Zone and what I like in anthologies.
Yeah.
At the end of the movie of Baby Driver, he gets the one thing that he cherishes the most taken away from him. And that just second time watching it, second time peeling a tear for that. And I was just like, freaking Edgar Wright. Like, you expect the thing to be taken away. You expect that thing to be a loved one. But no, it's only something that he cherishes. And it was just like, God, Edgar Wright's so freaking good. So that goes back to the Burgess Meredith, like, dropping the glasses. Like, oh, God, it crushes me every time I see stuff like that.
Nice.
So that's why, like, the end of episode one of Electric Dreams, that crushed me, dude. That right? crushed me.
Because here's the thing. So, I mean, spoiler alert. I think I talked about the last episode. Wait, is that coming out yet?
I don't think so.
All right, maybe it didn't come out yet. So maybe I didn't talk about it last episode. But the thing is, the way that the story is set up, it makes you wonder what's real and what's not, right?
Mm-hmm.
And they do a really good job about not telling you what is and isn't real for pretty much most of the episode.
But they also have people in both of the virtual reality simulations explaining to that character within that virtual reality environment, hey, you realize the other thing is not what you think it is.
Right.
Do you expect over there, do you expect it to be the perfect world with the perfect person and the perfect job and the blah, blah? How does that even sound like reality? And then in the other environment, they're saying the same exact thing. I was just like, God, it's good. Oh, my God. It had me twisting and turning. And even when we first started it, Liz goes, I don't like a show that doesn't have a through line. that things connect up. But by the second episode, she was like completely in. Because it was so different.
Well, so but let me ask you, though. Don't you think that you would know one way or the other if you were in a virtual reality space?
Not if it was that good. Your brain's tricky, man. But that's just like eyewitnesses. I mean, the studies of people that can like imagine things happening to them if they imagine it enough, then all of a sudden it becomes real. Like, how many lies have you told and then all of a sudden that lie becomes a truth?
Yeah.
Like, that's the stuff that Philip K. Dick's playing around. It's just, oh.
Yeah. God, that's a good point. But the thing is, like, surely, all right. So for the most part, I agree. Now, Philip K. Dick was, I don't know how much you know about him, but he was a little odd, Nick.
I would hope.
He was borderline paranoid schizophrenic.
Sure.
And I think that reflects pretty well in the stories that he writes.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think they take that aspect far enough in some of these stories. But I understand why. Like, you wanna when you're making a TV show of some sort in this way, like a streaming only,
as well as a you have to have a decent enough writer come in and modernize it.
Oh, sure.
You take you sprinkle in the original stuff, but you sort of have to be able to leap it into this is what somebody in 2000 slate clean might want to watch.
Yes. So it's hard, but he was kind of a paranoid schizophrenic. And I think if you're a Philip K. Dick fan, you can tell some of that stuff in his stories.
Yeah.
But with the show, I think some of that gets taken away. And, I think I think what makes this first episode really good is that a lot of that Philip K. Dick is still in it, whereas a lot of the other episodes, some of that paranoid schizophrenia is kind of taken out to make the story more palatable to and I get that. But at the same time, like, I would say out of the whole season, at least what I've watched, I've got, I think, 3 episodes left.
Because is it 8 episodes or 10?
10.
Okay. Yeah. Okay, good to know.
So I've still got a few left. But out of the whole season, I would say this story, frankly, is the most Philip K. Dick. This one in the second episode. It is the one that feels to me the most true to what Philip K. Dick was writing.
I can see that. You know what was great? My favorite response from my wife was during episode 3. And the wife is running in this beautiful jungle. And then all of a sudden, of course, you find out it's like a hologram.
Right.
And right when that got interrupted and you saw like this circular like platform going around her while she's on a treadmill, my wife's like, God, I wish we had that. And I was in my head, I was just like, that's why it's good sci-fi. Like, it's something that you could sort of believe that we could have in 30, 40, 50 years. Like, it's obtainable.
I don't even know. Would it be that long?
No, I don't think so. But I loved, like, that circular I loved how all of the sound was, like, vacuumed out. Like we have now with those, like, Bose headphones for airplanes. Like, all of that was just sucked out and just, like, it really transport, like, it's something that's why I love sci-fi. Like, it's something that possibly could happen.
Yeah.
This isn't fiction. This possibly could happen.
Well, and I think that's why I like this better than Black Mirror. I think Black Mirror, as good as it is, especially the last season, Black Mirror goes kind of out of its way to make you understand that this is kind of like a precautionary tale of what wanting sci-fi concepts to become reality will ultimately how it will ultimately affect society.
Don't wish too hard for
exactly.
Yeah.
Whereas Electric Dreams isn't that, because it's based on pre-existing Philip K. Dick story.
I thought episode 2 definitely felt like that type of thing.
Well, and I don't know if everybody would feel that way though, because the thing is, like, you and I are very much invested in that Amazon universe.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas I feel like a lot of people that listen to this maybe are not as much. By the way, I don't know if you knew this. You can now use Alexa on the Alexa app on your
phone. Ooh, nice.
That's new as of this week, which is awesome for me because I have a Chamberlain MyQ skill. A custom skill that I created, my garage door, and so now I can use my garage door. All right. So, anyways, talking about now, I forgot.
It was episode 2, being very Amazon-y.
So I think about that a lot. And so one of my favorite podcasts is Daily Tech News Show. And they talk a lot about this kind of stuff. And as much as I love the way that the Amazon ecosystem is evolving,
I do wonder, like, at what point does it stop, right? And part of that is because I do have, I don't know if you've got an Amazon warehouse near you, but I've got one near me. It's like 30 minutes from me, right?
Yeah, mine is about the same. It's in Joliet.
Okay. Yeah. So, mine is not very far, but the weird thing is, I used to work literally down the street from the Amazon warehouse. It was right after my wife and I got married. So, about 4 years ago. Like, I would have to drive by the Amazon warehouse to get home. And, this episode, as a result, rings really true to me. Because I think it encompasses a lot of the stuff that I wonder about recently in terms of how the economy is changing. Because, all right, I'm just going to say this out loud. I think within, like, I don't want to say five, but maybe within 10 years, I don't think we're going to have any people or maybe very few in any kind of local retail establishment. In particular, if it's a chain place. So, I think like Whole Foods would be the first place to see them. They're owned by Amazon.
Right.
But I think like retail places are going to become more intelligent in terms of AI. So a place like Whole Foods, for me, it's a no-brainer. And it would be like you walk in and there's Alexa and you just, see what I'm saying?
Mm-hmm.
No, Alexa, not you.
Sorry.
Yeah.
Your Echo Dot lost its connection.
Thanks, I appreciate that. So,
we're getting there, aren't we, when we can talk to our Dot and request that Walmart fills the order and has it waiting for us, and all we have to do is drive up and get it.
Oh, absolutely.
Like, we are inches away from that.
Well, and my wife does that now.
Right, I know.
We get our groceries at Walmart.
Mm-hmm.
That's why
I brought it up.
She doesn't order by voice, but she goes on the website and does it. And it works really well. And it's extremely convenient because she shows up and they come up and they're like, what's your name? Doesn't Ferretti. And I'm with the groceries.
Yeah.
So it's very convenient. But yeah, I wonder how that's going to affect any different aspects of just going out and buying things. You know what I'm saying? Like, not just going to Whole Foods, but just everything. Because for me, like, that's my ideal. And maybe it's not a lot of people's, but it is for me. Like, if it was me, I would just get on my Echo device and just order everything. Right? But there's certain things that I still can't get just from that device. Right? So if I could just be like, hey, Alexa, order me this, one of these, and three of these, and five of these, and two of these, and three of these, and six of these, and whatever, ship them on Thursday. Like, for me, that's the ideal. Because I never have to leave my house, and it just shows up. And I think for me, that's what makes the most sense. I know that there's still people that, like, I mean, I love food. I would consider myself a foodie in some respects. And so, of course, like, I would want to go somewhere and taste something and smell something and see what it looks like. If it's closed, like, maybe try them on. But ultimately, like, I don't want to just buy it there. I would just order it on Amazon. And I think that's what makes episode 2 so good, is because
it's almost an extension of that, right? Because so when the episode starts, it's like an end of the world thing. And you learn some like weird things about this universe where it's kind of like Walking Dead, but not really because there's no zombies. But then once these people go into the Autofac, the factory that still makes goods for people, even though there's very few people left. The twist at the end, really interesting. Matter of fact,
yeah, I liked it more with the Autofac representative talking to the camp of people, and I liked them talking about their footprint, their global footprint, a lot more interesting. But I gotta say, the character design that when they went to the factory, that character design with the scalloped, like
the assassin,
the metal.
Oh God, yes,
God, that looked really cool.
It looked freaking awesome. Yeah. Matter of fact, it almost looked like one of the characters in Rye from Valiant.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, for sure.
Yeah, I love that.
For sure,
because the representative didn't look that futuristic. It just looked kind of like a person.
Yeah, which is what, and they even explained we want to be looked at as, you know, something that would make you comfortable.
Yeah, yeah.
But I thought that was really fun.
It was good. And
how about the main character when they show flashbacks and she's running through this desolated apocalyptic area and she's trying to grab as many like books as she can and magazines. Well, I was like, that's really why I liked neat. It,
right? Because that's one of my favorite Twilight Zone episodes.
Mm-hmm.
And you brought it up in this.
The value of literature.
Yeah.
And it's like, I kept looking at all of the book covers. I'm like, ooh, there's John Updike. Ooh, there's...
Yeah, it was really good, really good. I would say the first three episodes are the best. I haven't seen the whole season yet. I'm still a few episodes shy. But from everything I've seen... Those first three, I think, would be the most different from other things that I've seen before. Because obviously, cool. I consume a lot of sci-fi. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, you do.
And some of them seem like things that I've seen before. Like the Steve Buscemi episode, I think was my least favorite.
Sure.
But I mean, like there were cool aspects. It was almost like a crime noir type story. It was kind of noir.
Mm-hmm.
But set in the future. But I don't feel like it tied in cohesively enough to make it stand out for me. I did like there was one episode I was tweeting about it because it was so weird.
I know where you're going, and it's in the opening credits, isn't it?
I think it is.
With the meteors coming down towards the town.
I want to say it's episode like 6 or 7. I want to say 7 because I think it's the last one I saw. A few days ago from the time of this recording, there was a meteor that fell down in Michigan, and people saw it like in Ohio and Michigan, Indiana, parts of Canada. And the weird thing was for me, the night that I watched that episode, there was an actual meteor that people were seeing in Michigan and Ohio and in Canada. And I found it the next day because I went to talk about that episode on Twitter the next day that I saw it. And I saw that hashtag meteors something or other. I think it was hashtag meteor. Was trending on Twitter, and I was like, what the fuck? So I started going through the tweets and the hashtag, and like the stuff that in this episode had actually happened. Except, of course, like not the part of aliens taking over people's bodies.
Right, right.
And I mean, it was a good episode, but it was kind of like Invasion of the Body Snatchers.
Okay.
So nothing that I hadn't seen before.
Oh, that's all right.
But it was still cool. And the thing is, like, I think when I watch the show, I try to do my best to not compare it to other things. Because even though, like, by now we've seen all these, so for example, the Invasion of the Body Snatchers, when Philip K. Dick was writing this stuff, a lot of the stuff hadn't been, like, seen in TV or movies before, you know what I mean?
Right.
So, like, seeing these things 50, 60 years later, it's a little different than the mindset that Philip K. Dick was in when he was writing the stories.
Well, do you remember, sorry for the tangent, no, but do you remember what I DM'd you asking you what was that Netflix series?
Travelers.
I know.
Yes.
I actually, truth be told, I actually started that.
Ooh.
And I got about 3 minutes, 4 minutes, 5 minutes into it. Because my wife was upstairs taking a bath. So I was like, well, if she listens to something that sounds interesting, she might be like, because she's done it before where I put on documentaries and then it, just by listening to it for 20, 30 minutes, she'll come downstairs and like, what are you watching? And then I sort of explain. She's like, oh, okay, yeah, let's watch that. That sounds interesting. So I put on Travelers, and I love, as you know, I love the countdown clock concept. Yes. And they showed it about four times before I turned it off.
Yep.
But the amount of people dying in it, right off the bat, I was just like, this might be a little too intense for her right now. Let me try Electric Dreams. And that's how I switched over to Electric Dreams.
That's fair enough. Although I will say, I think there's more people dying at the beginning of that show.
They have to set up the concept,
yeah,
I'm sure.
Yeah. Once you've established the characters, there's not many people die, to be honest with you.
Yeah, I'm sure. I knew to set, when you look at that team, when you like click on the Travelers and you see that little like image of the Eric McCormick with like six people behind him.
Yeah.
I'm like, obviously they have to set that up. So a lot of people have to die for these people to be there.
So how far did you get in Travelers?
Like I said, 5 minutes.
Oh, wow. Just one episode, not even.
Not even.
Oh,
I mean, literally 5 minutes. I saw the, like, ultimate fighting guy die, come back and say, I'm done. I concede. I saw the woman who was going to get raped, and then all of a sudden she turned into this, you know, kung fu maniac. I saw, like I said, three or four people die and become, like, and it was good acting. I was like, ooh, you can definitely tell they're a different person now.
Sure.
But I was just like, I don't know if the wife is going to listen to this and be like, this is way too violent. Please turn this off.
All right. Well, okay. I don't think you went far enough in.
Well, I'm sure I didn't. I think I just have to watch an episode and do the same exact thing.
Yeah.
And then when she says, what's going on? Like Electric Dreams, I was just like, I don't know. It's sci-fi. I have no idea. They're in the future, and she's going to put on a VR headset. That's all I know.
No, that's fair enough. I'm glad that you started Electric Dreams. I think Electric Dreams is.
Yeah, I'm excited.
Hang on a second. I might go ankle.
Oh God.
Hello.
Hey.
Is it me you're looking for?
No.
So
I did like the flying car in episode one of Electric Dreams. Yeah, I thought that was fun.
Yeah, episode one was cool. Here's the thing, episode one was really good because I think out of all of them, it's the one that's closest to now.
You know what I'm saying? I was just about to say with the electric car, I loved the VR touch screens and stuff, like, augmented reality touch screens. Like, it reminded me of Minority Report.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I think we're really close to getting there.
Well, I mean, if you look at all the tech announcements, everything's coming in 2020.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, just give it 2 years, and all of it will belong to us. Yeah.
Oh, and if anyone's on the fence, I don't know if you want to move on or if you're done. If anyone's still on the fence about Electric Dreams, the creators or Philip K. Dick loves to show future sex. They love it. They eat it up every episode. Yeah. Yum, yum, yum.
I was a little disappointed, to be honest with you.
About what, that they didn't show Bryan Cranston's dingling, even though he was completely naked?
Well, I mean, you did see his ass, so there's that.
Yeah, you did. Yes, you did. I was like, whoa, that's all of Bryan Cranston right there. Look, wow.
No, it's disappointing because I don't mind seeing sex on TV. It doesn't bother me. But I think, like, it needs to make sense. You know what I'm saying?
I would think for you it would be disappointing because they really don't need it.
Well, that's the thing.
It needs to make sense. Like, oh, great, here's my daughters walking through while I'm watching this. Oh, boy. Like, you know what I'm saying? Like, because you don't need it. There's nothing that made that make sense. The only one I guess I could sort of understand why it was there, but they really didn't need it, was episode 3.
Oh, I was gonna say the first episode.
I'm just saying to show the differences.
Yeah.
The before and after.
But the thing is, for me, the sex in episode 3 felt like watching Eyes Wide Shut.
Yeah, like I said, you don't need it. You don't need it on any of them. But yeah. Especially showing like naked bits.
Yeah, it was kind of pointless. I mean, I see what you're saying. It did make some kind of sense in the third episode. But the thing is, they didn't expand on that, why that would make a difference.
Or I'm even beyond the Bryan Cranston part. Let's not forget that she goes to a street level.
No,
she has to wear an aspirator to get into this sex club.
Yeah.
This future sex club.
Yep.
It's like, you didn't need to have that. If she wasn't miserable, if we didn't see how miserable and horrible her life was before, like, you don't need to show the sex club to make it out. Like, she has to go somewhere else to get this.
Yeah, but with that episode, I mean, from watching the episode, you can tell that she obviously needs to go somewhere else to get it. You know what I mean?
Yeah, but you don't need to see it.
Sure.
But I like seeing it, yeah.
I mean, there's another show coming out that's, I would say, maybe in a similar vein. And you and I were talking about it before we started recording.
Yes.
Netflix original, Altered Carbon. So before we start recording,
did you say it or?
Yeah,
because you
altered.
Yeah, carbon. You phased out there.
Oh, did I?
Yeah.
All right. Let me tell you about this phasing.
It's Altered Carbon.
If
people didn't hear it.
So yeah, it'll be in the recording. There is an issue from Google with the Chromecast devices where they're like pinging the local network like a normal device would, except they're pinging too much data, and as a result, they're like DDoSing local Wi-Fi network. And of course, I always loved our Chromecast devices because they're extremely convenient, and we have multiple Chromecast devices in this house. But let me tell you, Nick, it has been really fucking up our shit lately.
Oh, I don't doubt it.
I almost unplugged all of them.
Wow.
It's gotten really bad.
I'm sure they'll fix it.
Well, they're supposed to have fixed it last Thursday, but the way they rolled their updates out, it takes weeks before everybody gets them.
Ugh, God.
And it is really annoying. I put the fix on my phone and on my wife's phone,
But it still doesn't fix all the issues because the Chromecasts need to be updated. Their software needs to be updated. So it's still super annoying. And right now, the only fix that actually works is to reboot the whole Wi-Fi network.
Boo.
So that's really annoying.
Yeah.
Anyways, we're not talking about that. Altered Carbon. This mm-hmm. one's really good. Where do I know that guy from? The main actor.
Dude, from Highlander.
Wait, no. The other guy. What? The detective.
I only recognize the Highlander dude.
Well, yeah, I recognized him. He's the guy that gets killed, but he's not dead because he's still alive. No, the main guy, the guy that he hires to find out who killed him.
I couldn't tell you.
Oh, God. I got to go. He looked really familiar. Is that him? That's not him.
Well, just even the special effects, I thought, and the surroundings, that looked so Blade. I thought they were going to say Blade Runner.
It looks series. Really Blade Runner.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
Yeah, there was a lot of neon in that cyberpunk world that they're creating.
Yeah, it looks really Blade Runner, which makes me really excited. Show.
Hey. Yeah. Especially, and didn't they announce a Blade Runner series is in development?
Is there?
I could have swore I read that.
Are you serious?
Yeah, I could have swore.
Huh.
But anywho, this is it.
I mean, maybe.
Yeah, it looked good.
It looks really good. The trailer looks awesome. It's
yeah, and they just put out a new commercial during the playoff game.
Oh, really?
Tonight on Fox, yeah. So I saw a whole different version that was definitely a lot less. Let's show the atmosphere and environment. It was definitely a lot more talking heads.
Oh, dude,
which was good. Now they need to do that.
Now I know who it is.
Who?
It's freaking Joel Kinnaman. He was Rick Flagg in Suicide Squad.
Oh yeah, he was also in. What was it? The Missing? The Hunted?
He was the senator in House of Cards.
And he wasn't he the druggy police officer?
Yeah, in The Killing.
The Killing, yes, that's it.
And he was also Alex Murphy in the RoboCop reboot.
Why do you think I was so excited for Suicide Squad? I love The Killing, dude. He was really good in that.
But yeah, he's the detective in Altered Carbon.
That's really exciting. I didn't even see him. He blipped on, blipped off real quick.
For me. In the new trailer, he's in like half of that trailer.
Well, the one that I was watching live, as soon as I saw the Blade Runner environment, I quickly grabbed my phone so I could send out a text to you and Twitter and like, holy Christ, people have to check this out. So could I have had my nose buried in my phone when his scenes were on? Sure.
Yes. I saw the trailer and I was like, wait, who the fuck is this guy? Like, I was like, this looks awesome, but wait, I know this guy.
Yes. Yeah, looking
that's
good.
That's who it is. Rick Flagg.
And even my wife, after watching, Electric Sleep, what was it? Electric Dreams. Even my wife said, because she caught that trailer as well, she's like, wow, Netflix and Amazon's really putting out a lot of like original content that's looking good. It's like, yes, it is. Yep.
Yeah, I agree.
Yeah, it's exciting.
You gotta think too about the budget. Right? It's like the budget on Electric Dreams has to be pretty high.
I would think so. I mean, all that like CGI special effects stuff, all that, unless the prices have come down drastically on that type of stuff.
I mean, maybe they have, because so The Expanse, I love watching The Expanse. It's a sci-fi original based on the books. I don't know if you ever read The Expanse?
No.
I want to say there's like 5 books out.
Maybe I can go check them out on Audible.
Yeah, you should do that. Nerdlegion.com/audible. Get your free book. Maybe part one of The Expanse.
Yeah, ring the bell.
And even if you don't like it, you get to keep it forever. So The Expanse is really fucking good. Matter of fact, Sparky and I have been talking about
it. Nice.
Because he's been reading it. I read, I want to say, the first 3 books. And since I've read it, there's a couple more that came out. So I just finished rereading the first one, actually.
Nice.
And it's really good. It's about, so it's in the future, near-ish future.
Uh-huh.
People go to colonize the solar system. And so there's a colony in Mars. Obviously, there's still people on Earth. And there were colonies in the asteroid belt because we're mining the asteroid belt for resources.
Mm.
And as a result, like, not all of humanity is quite the same, right? So the people that are mining resources in the asteroid belt are the belters. They have evolved a little bit differently because of gravity. So,
makes sense.
So they're much taller. They're much thinner than normal people. They also mm-hmm. can't like go to Earth because of the environment they live in. If they go to Earth, their bones are pretty much crushed because they can't handle the gravity. And then like there's colonies on Mars. They're kind of at war with Earth in some respects. And they're a little more violent, I guess, because of the environment that they live in. They kind of police the galaxy also. So they become a more militaristic society. And it's really interesting because the whole series of books is about this interaction between Earth and the Mars colony and the asteroid colonies. And of course, there is an actual colony on one of the asteroids where people live, and there's outposts in like different asteroids. But it's really fucking good. My favorite thing is like the Belters developed their own language, because like people from different nationalities go the asteroid belt to mine, and so in the future there's a pigeon language of English, but it sounds very different because there's borrowed words from like low-class Spanish people and low-class like African people and low-class people from English-speaking countries. And so the basis of the language is English, but there's a lot of like Spanish words borrowed and French words and Portuguese words and like Mandarin words as well. So it's like a hodgepodge language, and it's, you know, so anyway, I love The Expanse.
You're a sucker for any language based content.
If you put like a made up language in a sci-fi TV show, I just like jizz all over the
place. Yep, that's your thing.
Sci-fi in linguistics. Get at me.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
That's why the 100 is my favorite sci-fi TV show.
Wow.
Have you seen the 100?
It's in my queue cuz you keep talking about it.
Dude, I think it's like 3 seasons.
Yeah, I know Netflix has some of them. That's why I put it in my queue.
Yeah. I think it's 3 and the latest season is on CW.
Oh, okay.
So if it's not on Netflix now, it will be very shortly cuz they have that deal. Where, like, pretty soon after the season, it just goes to Netflix.
Good.
And it is kind of CW. So there is the romance stuff.
Yeah.
The sci-fi stuff is freaking fantastic. And they also have their own language.
Huh.
What's it called? Trigadislong. The language of the tree people.
Sure.
Which is based on English, and it's freaking... Awesome. I can't wait. I think that show comes back in April or May for the new seasons. I can't wait. And it's written by the Benson sisters, who write Batgirl and the Birds of Prey for DC Comics.
Yeah, I like it even more.
That's so good. I'm going to watch the 100 right now.
You can. Go to Netflix.
I could, but I won't. Because I might watch some more Overwatch League.
Yes, I know you've been watching some Overwatch.
All right, so have you checked out the Overwatch League?
I haven't checked out the Overwatch League, but I've watched many streamers stream out some Overwatch gameplay.
All right, have you ever played Overwatch?
No, I haven't, and I've been very tempted. All it would take is one of my friends back in the day when it first launched to be like, I'll buy that game. Because it had so many characters and different abilities, and like I thought all the characters looked so unique and played so differently. Like I was even watching, like, GameSpot had a video tutorial on like every character and its power set, when to use the powers, what to do, how to use the character. And I even watched all of those videos, just soaking it all in. It just seemed so interesting.
So I don't play it. No, it's a Blizzard game. So you would think that it would, because you know me and Hearthstone.
Yeah.
But the difference is Hearthstone, like, yeah, you have to like buy packs and whatever to get more stuff. But Overwatch, you have to just buy the game. It's like, whatever, 40, 50 bucks to buy the game. And so as a result, I never played it. Because I'm more content with micro-purchases than just spending a bunch of money in the game.
Shouldn't you be jumping into it now so you can get the exclusive Olympic costumes for each character?
I saw that. So, yeah. Well, I never played it. But the thing is, like, I think I would have fun playing it. But you know me, Nick. I'm not a online gamer.
Right.
Like, I prefer solo adventures. You know what I'm saying? Like, if a game's got a good single player, I'll play it. If it's like, have to get online to play with somebody to get anything done, chances are it's not my thing.
But doesn't watching the gameplay of, like, high level gameplay of a game, doesn't that sort of, at least for me, it like satiated my will, my want to go and play it?
Well, yes and no, because at first I was really confused. So I listened to quite a few podcasts. Like, I think I subscribed to like 80 podcasts.
Yeesh.
So I listened to quite a few, and one in particular, the guy that does the podcast does like, oh God, what is it? I want to say Heroes of the Storm. Is that Blizzard?
I want to say yes, but don't quote me on that because I'm not a PC person.
Let me look it up as I'm chatting. But anyways, he does, Heroes of the Storm, the core podcast, Heroes of the Storm podcast. He does that. He's very into video games. Scott Johnson's the guy. He does the morning stream, which I love because it's a daily show, and it's funny as shit. But anyways, so he does Core. He loves Blizzard. I think they used to do, I don't know if they still do. Yeah, The Instance, the World of Warcraft podcast, and a bunch of other stuff. Anyways, so he was talking about it on the morning stream. And I was like, at first, I was like, who would want to watch people play Overwatch? Because, like, this is a big, like, Blizzard spent a shit ton of money on this.
Oh, yeah.
From what I heard, it's like $90 million that they spent to get this thing up and going. They bought Johnny Carson's old studio,
So the matches and streams are from Johnny Carson's old studio.
Oh wow.
I want to say, wasn't that the same studio from Jay Leno? Or is there a different studio?
I couldn't tell you.
I want to say it's the same studio. Anyway, I know for a fact that it's Johnny Carson's. I think there was like other shows that were taped in that same studio. But Blizzard bought it for to stream Overwatch matches.
Wow.
There's like, I don't know, 8 or 10 teams from around the world. And I think each of those teams like cost like $30 million to get together. Cause they have like a team house and they have to have obviously like the best players. And I think it's like when they do the Overwatch matches, it's like 5-on-5. But there's like 10 people in each team so they can like rotate or whatever, in between matches. Anyways. I gotta tell you, Nick, this guy talked about the Overwatch League for like 4 days in a row.
Mm-hmm.
About how much he loved it. And at first I was like, all right, Scott, like, yes, you're a Blizzard fanboy. Like, you're just gonna be all about this because Blizzard makes Overwatch.
Sure.
But by the, like, the third or fourth time that he's talking about it, and somebody else is like, oh yeah, like, that was really fun to watch. I was like, you know what? Fuck it. I'm going to go and see what this is about.
Do you find it on YouTube?
So,
do they have their own channel?
So there is an Overwatch League YouTube channel, but they don't have the games there.
What?
They have like clips and interviews with the players and all that stuff.
Oh, brother.
There is an Overwatch League VODs channel, which you can watch the matches. But the thing is, Blizzard made a deal with Twitch. And so if you want to watch the matches, they want you to watch Twitch.
Do they have all the content on Twitch then?
I haven't looked on Twitch yet.
Darn it. Come on, Freddy.
Dude, I found the VOD channel on YouTube. I'm going to watch these. And literally, I watched like 6 matches back to back.
Do they have commentary over it?
I gotta tell you, Nick, they have 2 commentators.
Yeah.
I'm pretty sure they're like either ex or current Overwatch players. Because they know way too much about it. As you know.
In a good way?
Yeah, in a good way.
Okay. That's good.
As you know, I love Hearthstone. And there's a lot of professional players that do Hearthstone commentary, and it's really good. But I gotta tell you, the commentary from these 2 guys on the Overwatch League. I've never played Overwatch. I've never seen a game of Overwatch being played.
Mm-hmm.
I know what the game's about, but I've never seen it played.
Sure.
And I put this channel on, and just listening to these 2 guys talk about what's happening in the game, I was hooked.
Wow.
And I have no idea what's happening in this game. Like, literally no idea. I know it's a team-based first-person shooter, and that's all I knew before I watched any of these videos. And I watched, like, 3 or 4 matches where I had no idea what they were talking about.
Hmm.
And I think, like, the first game or 2 that I watched was really confusing because, like, they're commentating, but you're watching these 2 teams play each other live. And so what you're seeing is game footage.
Mm.
And it gets a little difficult because from what I see in Overwatch, it's a very busy game.
Oh, yeah.
Like, there's shit blowing up everywhere.
And yep.
People jumping and shooting shit everywhere.
It all looks good, though.
It looks great.
But yeah, it's real pretty.
But it's a little...
hectic.
It's a little OCD.
Yeah, it's a little hectic.
Yeah, it's like the Twitter of video games.
But guess what? When you're if you were playing it, you would want your stuff popping off. You don't want to all of a sudden look and like nothing's happening around you, but 3 blocks down, man, is it going off? You know what I'm saying? Like, I get their design choice. Like, everything looks like it's popping off.
Yeah, but the thing is, like, at some point, it's like a little too much. Because it's 5-on-5 when they do these league matches.
Yeah.
And so there's 10 players on the field at one point. And you don't see like all 10 at one point. But I think part of the problem is maybe the camera angles aren't quite correct all the time.
Sure.
Because most of the time when you're seeing these matches, they're from the point of view of one particular player.
Right.
And they do cut to like scenes, like overhead scenes.
Where you see static cameras.
Yeah, static cams where you see the teams going against each other.
Sure.
But like 95% of the time, you're seeing it from one person's point of view.
Mm-hmm.
And when you have 10 people, and part of the point of the matches is one team has to get this like cart from one part of the map to another part of the map.
Yeah, the payload.
The payload. I'm trying to not use Overwatch words because when they're like, yeah, the payload, and I was like, what the fuck's the payload? So in trying to explain it, I'm trying not to use it. But yes,
sure.
They're trying to get the payload from one side of the map to another. And so the point is whoever is moving the payload wants to get the payload to the other side. Whoever is not moving the payload wants to get the team moving the payload to die before they get the payload to the other side.
And the only way to get the payload, the cart to move, is being in its vicinity.
Correct.
Yes.
And the thing is, like, it was really interesting because at first it looked like a complete clusterfuck.
Yeah.
Like there's just shit flying everywhere and shit blowing up everywhere. But the commentators are kind of explaining the game as it goes along. And I found it really interesting because they actually used like professional sports language that
sure.
I understood. I just wasn't sure how it applied to these games. Because like before the match starts, you see like the teams getting ready to play or whatever, and before the countdown starts, and like I was watching one match. It was the Dallas team against the Seoul team, and the Dallas team had set up this defensive barrier in one part of the map. And they're talking about like the strategy that they're using and why they're using it and how like this other team from, I want to say from England, was the first team to use it professionally. And like why that's important. And I was like, wait, what the fuck? That's when I realized these are actual teams.
Oh, yeah.
Like they're getting coached by people. They have like defensive strategies and offensive strategies. Like they don't do timeouts that I saw, but like in between matches, because they play multiple matches at once. In between matches, they're like replacing players because in Overwatch they have like different roles for different characters. So you've got like defensive characters. You've got offensive characters. And so, like, there's actual strategies for these teams to decide which players they're going to pick play these games because the players, the characters they're best at, each have different roles. Just like in an actual sports team.
Mm-hmm.
Right? Like, in a sports team, you have, like, people on defense and you have people on offense. And then within that, there's like subdivisions, right? So you've got your quarterback, you've got your center and your tackle, whatever, if you're playing football.
It's like any esports.
Yeah. Well,
like Dota or League of Legends, like people have their own like set of strategies and this is what we're going to do and how we attack. And
but see, for me, this was eye opening, we'll say. Because while I have never played Overwatch, I have played Dota and League of Legends games. But I never connected why people watch these things. Why people watch professional players.
I mean, Dota tournaments sell out like stadiums. Well, so
apparently. And the, yeah. And the thing is, with like the Overwatch League, I think there were like 10 million people that watched the first week. And yeah, like they've got a live audience there, but that studio is not very big. Most of the people watching are just watching on Twitch. I think Twitch got an exclusive deal with thing.
I'm sure.
But it was interesting for me to see it because I never realized until I saw this that like this is an actual sport.
This is a real thing.
You see what I'm saying?
This like, esports.
Dude, like I've been playing video games for 30 years. Like for me, video games are always just about having fun. But now seeing the Overwatch League, it's obvious to me. And the weird thing is like I watch Hearthstone tournaments. But like Hearthstone is not a team sport.
No.
Right? It's like watching a chess match.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas
Overwatch, or watching a fighting game.
Sure.
Tournament.
Sure.
Like that's one against one.
So watching something like Overwatch for me was completely different. And it was awesome, dude. I watched like five or six matches back to back. And the matches are not very long because they're timed, right? Like just like in a quote unquote real sport, where you have, you know, periods or quarters or whatever the hell. You've got timed intervals for these matches. And, it was really interesting. I like I said, I watched like five or six games and a lot of it was really confusing because there's just so much happening on the screen at one point. And I don't know anything about the characters that these people are playing, but some of them seem really fucking cool.
Yeah.
I don't necessarily want to play the game, but I do want to watch more of it because I had a lot of fun doing it.
That's where I am with it. That's why I watch a lot of like video game, like people talking over video games.
Yeah.
There's a fun factor of like, this person knows way more than I do, but you're curious. You want to see where this is going. Yeah.
It was awesome.
Look at you.
Overwatch.
Now finally you can be like, I'm going to go to Twitch.
I mean, I go to Twitch, but I watch fucking Hearthstone people.
Yeah, well, now you can jump in there and watch some Dota and some other esports.
But it was cool, too, because so I don't watch Hearthstone play. I mean, yes, they're entertaining. But I don't watch Hearthstone matches because they're exciting. Because, I would compare it to something like chess. I watch it for the strategy, right? Like, I want to know why people are using certain cards and why they use them and how those cards tie into other cards. Whereas it seems like a game like Overwatch, it seemed more like fun factor. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, but all it takes is for me a good commentator, and like I don't like fighting games.
Dude, and
but
that's exactly
if there's a good Street Fighter tournament going on Twitch, guess what? I have an extra hour. I'll sit here and, you know, as long as they're explaining stuff and I'm not completely confused, I'll sit there and watch that, and I see the excitement of it.
And that's the only reason I stuck around. Because I feel like if I had come upon a streamer on Twitch streaming Overwatch and I was watching what I watched, I would be like, I don't know what the fuck I just watched.
Right.
I'm out of here.
Yeah, you need somebody explaining it.
But these guys telling me all the stuff and why, like, this guy just jumped in and grabbed the grenade and fucking threw it back. And these guys are across the field and why they're sniping these other guys. Like what the hell this card is that they're riding around. All the stuff like made more sense to me. And it was really fun, dude. I was so surprised how much I enjoyed it.
That's exciting.
I will be watching more. And I hope it goes well for Blizzard because they spent a shit ton of money on this.
Yeah, buying a whole... You would think that they would buy... Aren't they based out of, like, Texas?
Is
that Bethesda? That might be Bethesda.
Well, no, I think Blizzard's got a development team in Austin.
Yeah, you would think that you would just build something in Austin.
Yeah, well, they're not based in Austin, but they've got a team in Austin. I think the main team is in California.
Oh, okay.
Yeah,
obviously they're making plenty of money that they figured this stuff out. So I'm not too worried about Blizzard.
No, not at all. Although, you know what? Yeah. I do miss the old school days, dude, when I would just play like Warcraft 3. You know what I'm saying?
Oh, I hear you.
Warcraft 3 was my shit.
Anyway. Oh, man.
You want to wrap this up?
Yeah, let's do it.
What do we talk about for an hour and a half? I don't even know.
A lot of good stuff.
This has been the one, the only flagship podcast of the Nerdy Legion Network. The Nerdy Legion Podcast with Nick Wetmore. If you want to get in touch with us, at Nick Wetmore is his Twitter account. At Geekvine is mine. At Nerdy Legion is the show and the network. Of course, there's a network. Check out the other shows, including What's New? The newest ones, 2BT, Timey Wimey Podcast Hour.
Mm-hmm.
And I guess maybe by the time this comes out, another podcast.
Yeah, we'll have to talk about that later.
Yes, maybe next time.
Yeah.
Thanks for tuning in. Have a good one. Catch you next time.